I'm Chris from Nerd Alert News, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Check out all the other great podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, dudes and dudettes, you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. I'm Noel Clark. Don't you ever, ever, ever touch that dial.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Episode 181 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we care about each of you, just like family. Now get your feet off the coffee table, take those dirty dishes to the kitchen, and wash them. Don't just throw them in the sink. And remember to call your mother, because she misses you, and didn't carry you for 9 months to be dismissed the moment you find someone who just happens to look in your direction. Thank you very much. I am Jay, and with me in the GPR studios this week is Keir. How are you doing, Keir?
Fine, whatever. I'll go to my room. It's where all my toys are anyway.
And Haley, how are you tonight, Haley?
I went and saw my mom today because I wanted food. So, me.
And she would have left sooner, but she kept losing her keys.
Listen. So this week, we return once again to the panels conducted at the second Regeneration Who convention in the Baltimore area in March. Previously, we discussed the further development of characters once their tenure on the program ended. This time, we're joined by some wonderful guests on a panel devoted to family, and specifically incorporating Doctor Who into the family viewing. Whether we're talking about enjoying Who with the kids or trying to sway a not-so-kid into watching, we then look at the themes and aspects of the program that can really benefit a family collective viewing.
And it really was a great group of people. We were joined by a friend of the cast, Ty Gooden, who's also a writer for a number of geek-related outlets, and had some really great write-ups about the Regeneration Who Con after the fact, and we'll be sure to throw them into the notes as well, so you can partake in them. And we were also joined by a Whovian father-daughter pair, the Stroms, David and his 7.5 or 7 3/4-year-old daughter, Juliet, who showed up in full Dalek attire. We'll make sure some photos get shared as well. And she just kind of blew us away. She not only had a fantastic comprehension of the program on multiple levels, but based on some of the conversations we had with her and her father, David, it seems they had a really great method of discussing the program during viewing and then sort of doing a postmortem on it as well to talk about some of the themes and concepts that they'd been exposed to, character decisions, things like that. So really great, insightful, explicit and implicit comprehension, you know, grabbing all those teachable moments too. I was just amazed. So
yeah, it was great listening to her. It was one of those things that you really understand the old adage, you don't play down to children, you just play to them. Like, she got it better than most adults I know.
Yeah. Personal favorite has got to be her mention of how to introduce people to the program. She's talking to an adult who just doesn't get it. And she didn't even skip a beat. She just said, all right, well, do you like funny things? Do you like sad things? Do you like scary things? Do you like, you know, she just rattles them all off. She's like, whatever it is, there's one of these episodes for you. And she'd probably be able to name them, too, to be able to tell you which one you wanted to jump into. But she let them jump in and enjoy for themselves?
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right. Roll the audio tape. Remember those days? Audio tape?
Thanks for making it in on a Sunday morning. Our first panel for the day, we are starting off with raising a Whovian household, and some of the rewards and complications that come along with trying to maintain some of the appreciation of the show and some of the standards and the morals that show instills in its viewers. When you want to try to expose that to other people in the household, whether it be grown-ups or kids, or a combination of both. My name is Keir Hansen. I'm a host of a podcast called Gallifrey Public Radio. So you can find us online, gallifreypublicradio.com, and all its various things. And joining me on the panel today, I have a couple of individuals, well, two individuals and an evil pepper pot that, that are going to add to the discussion. So I'll let them introduce themselves. Ty, why don't you give us a little background?
Hi, I'm Ty Gooden. I am a work in financial advising during the day, but at night I freelance write. And I've written for a lot of places, The Guardian, Paper Magazine, Pace Magazine, Geek and Sundry, The Mary Sue. I've written a lot about Doctor Who, just really a lot of high-level fun things that people like to read with web articles. Talked a bit about the theist themes in Doctor Who. I've done some con coverage. I was here covering Regeneration Who last year. Based off of the work that I did for The Guardian, they invited me to do press here last year, and I must have done okay because they brought me back this year. Have two kids. My kids are 6 and 2, and both of them are Whovians. Married. Husband is not a Whovian, but he likes Marvel, so I let him stay.
Slides in under the radar there. And also joining me are the Stroms, David, and under there is 7-year-old? Seven and a half?
Mm-hmm.
7¾?
You say 7¾? Yeah.
It is Julia. David, why don't you tell us a little about yourselves?
Sure. Well, I am a second-generation Whovian. This is a third-generation Whovian. And I was introduced to the Doctor when I was probably just a little bit older than Juliet here, by my dad. I went to my first convention when I was about 9 or 10, and I think I mentioned, after this convention, I will have met all of the living classic doctors. So, although it's been like about a 30-year hiatus, so I'm excited to go to be at my first convention in about 30 years. I've seen every episode ever made that survives. That I haven't seen the lost episodes yet, but I've read most of the book, so I kind of know what went on. This little one has been a big fan for about a couple of years now.
2 years.
2 years? Yeah. You want to say anything, honey?
My first episode was with Amy and Rolly with the Elephant Doctor, and I wanted to watch it over and over again. At first, I didn't want to watch any other episode because I liked it so much. So then he introduced me to another one, I think, where the Doctor met Amy for the first time. But I don't really watch them in order.
Okay. Yeah, we really go all over the place. We started with the 11th Doctor, but now I think we've seen one with every Doctor except for maybe the 4th, actually. I think is actually the only one we haven't seen a full episode with.
Okay. And is it too early to ask, Juliet, who you think your favorite Doctor is right now, or are you still deciding?
I'm still deciding.
That's a good answer.
I like all of the Doctors.
That's a better answer. Well, I figured one of the best things to start with is actually going to be talking about the role of having kids in a Whovian household, because that's obviously one of the things that might be one of the trickiest points for someone who, either with a family that's in the process of growing, or whether it's something that's a passion among one of the parents that they want to introduce to other individuals in the household. I wanted to discuss the construct of the program itself and what lends itself to successes in that attempt. We know historically the show was based on the premise of not being a children's show, and I hear people make that misnomer all the time. It was not intended to be a children's program by any stretch. It was intended to be a family bridge program that got viewers from one demographic that was airing at the time in 63 to a more adult or mature audience program that was going to be running in a later slot. And they wanted something that was going to keep people from changing the dial or going off to do something else. So in the attempt to do so, they figured it's going to have some educational element to it. It's going to have some approachability. And I think that has stayed part of the core tenets of the program over the 5 decades plus that it's had its success, with varying degrees. But as far as specifically with kids in mind, based on your successes in introducing your kids to it, what do you think were the elements of the program, the zeitgeist of it, that made it successful to bring young viewers in?
Well, for me, I think a lot of it hinged around the doctor himself. He's someone who faces bravery, you know, who's brave in the face of danger, and you know, he doesn't always make what most people would consider to be the right decision, but he does the absolute best he can with the knowledge that he has going into a situation that he may not know a whole lot about. And that's kind of, you know, right now what I do with my 6-year-old daughter. As we go through and we watch the different episodes, we kind of sit down and talk about it at the end afterwards. And I'm like, well, how did you feel about that? How do you think the doctor handled it? Do you think there is another way that he could have approached it better? You know, and I told her, I was like, and she's like, well, you know, I don't know if I really would have done it that way. I would have done it this way. And I was like, yeah, but we're kind of looking on the outside in. And so, we talk about different things like that. Also with the characters and everything, the companions, since we're kind of seeing everything through the companion's lens, we're like, okay, looking at things from their perspective, how would you have helped the doctor differently? Would you have backed off? Would you have gone in and jumped in and helped him do something differently? What do you think if you were his companion? What would you have done? And a lot of things with the companions too, that thirst for adventure, to go and see the stars, and to that even though you're an ordinary person, you could do extraordinary things depending on what circumstance you're thrown into. So I told her, I was like, you look at all of these people, they're really no different than you and I are. You know, they're not aliens. They, you know, most of them don't have any kind of special powers or anything like that. I'm like, and it, you know, you really don't have to necessarily have the doctor to have that magic, because a lot of times they do wonderful and amazing things all on their own, you know? So I think, you know, the doctor and the companions and their bravery and everything definitely taps into a lot of the reason why we watch the program, you know? And then a lot of, there's so many different life lessons and everything that you can find in each one of the episodes. You know, there's always something that you can learn. You learn about people. It teaches them a lot about society. You know, you see a little bit of classism and everything in there. And so I think it kind of puts it on a level that kids can understand. Mm. Yeah.
Without necessarily being that final closing moment right before the credits where everyone sits down and has their reflective,
right,
that's what we learned kind of thing.
It
doesn't need that G.I. Joe, you know, more you know moment.
Right.
David, what about yourself?
Well, I think if there were two kind of elements that encapsulated everything, it would be curiosity and persistence. Like, I think the doctor just embodies the notion of curiosity. It's not just that he's brilliant, it's that he's just intensely interested in discovering and exploring. And I mean, even from the very first ones, it's like he wants to go to Skaro to see, like, I wonder what's there. Mm-hmm. And even some of his kind of murkier character attributes, his deception and everything, it's like he'll lie so he can explore. And as far as like the persistence, there's like, no matter how hopeless things seem, there's a better way. I think that, you know, we really, in the 50th special, we really saw that theme really come together in such a beautiful way, that even in the most hopeless possible situation, that he will find a different paradigm to look through if he needs to, mm-hmm, to find a better solution. So I think as far as those kind of values, like for my little Dalek here, like is curiosity and persistence and through nonviolent means as much as possible, like that he carries a screwdriver and not a gun.
Right. That's an excellent jumping point. Now that's obviously something that a lot of people observe when they try to describe what they find endearing about the program, is the fact that there is a nonviolent aspect to your protagonist. but it's not necessarily a nonviolent program at all times. And so that's one of the things that I wanted to sort of jump into here, and that has to do with making any decisions about tempering the content. You know, as we get familiar with the episodes, or if we see where a particular episode arc is headed, and we have to make a decision as to whether or not, is this going to be something I really want to sit my six-year-old down with? Okay. Or you say you got a two-year-old in the house as well that's starting to be interested in what this cavalcade of images really is. What are you using as your determining factors of where to draw the line in what some of the episodes have historically put to screen? Have you had to back away from a few and just say, even I personally wasn't sure if I was ready for that one, so I don't really know if my little ones are either.
Right, absolutely. I think when I first bought my oldest daughter into Doctor Who, and I came in, of course, as a new Who fan, and started off with the Ninth Doctor, watched through the 12th, and now I'm going back and kind of digging my way through the classic series slowly but surely. Since we were watching and I was catching my daughter up on Netflix, I did pre-screen a lot of it I had seen already. So, and I have a good feel for her personality type, what she's afraid of, kind of what she can handle, because I know her, you know. With my two-year-old, I don't think I temper it as much, just because she hasn't reached that level of awareness yet. So she's just kind of watching, and she'll stop and stand there, you know, if she sees a Dalek or something that kind of catches her eye, she'll stand there for a moment. But then you know how she is. She's two. She goes off and goes off and does something else. But my six-year-old is old enough to sit there and watch things in intent. And she's at the age now where there are things that frighten her, you know. And now that we are all caught up and we're currently active with the series, sometimes I do go online. I might check out maybe just a few images, or maybe check out some trailers, some clips. I try to avoid as much of the spoilery stuff because I don't want to be spoiled either, but then I also don't want her to watch something that's going to terrify her. Like, she's never seen any of the episodes with the Weeping Angels, because I know that that's the kind of thing that's going to have nightmares, and she's going to be in the bed with me at the end of the night. But, you know, she loves, it's something about the Daleks. She just loves them. She doesn't, you know, perceive them as a threat and as terrifying. And she wants to dress up as one, and she, you know, she has them in her room and everything. So when I know those episodes are coming up, I'm like, okay, we're okay with that. Every now and then, the trailers kind of deceive you, and some things sneak in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we're watching it, if I see where, you know, a situation is arising where it's getting a little much for her, I'm like, you know, Genesis, are you okay? You know, is this scaring you? Let me know if it's scaring you, and we'll back away, and maybe we'll go back and watch another episode that you're okay with. And if she says, you know, I'm okay, I can handle it and everything, and, you know, even if she's afraid and we get to the end, I told her, I was like, well, was the doctor afraid? I was like, what happened at the end? She was like, oh, the doctor saved the day, or the companion saved the day, or, you know, insert whoever's name is in there. That person saved the day, so everything ended up being, for the most part, okay. You know, with say for the exception of the two-parters where everything is all on top of his head. But I told her, I was like, even when you have two episodes that go together, because she understands the concept of a two-parter, I'm like, what usually happens at the end? She was like, everything's being up okay. She was like, nothing can stop the doctor. So,
Juliet. Would you say that Doctor Who is really a happy show, or a scary show, or some sort of combination of those things?
Well, some episodes are, like, mysterious, and some, I would say, are scary.
Okay.
But I like the scary ones better.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what makes the scary ones better episodes?
Well, I really like Daleks and Weeping Angels and Cybermen's, because I know that the Doctor is going to do something to save it, or the companion, or someone who's in the show, and stop it. And some episodes are sad, like the ones where the companions leave.
Right.
Or when the doctor regenerates.
Okay. Well, that's all right. Well, that's actually a really interesting point, and it's something we haven't discussed yet, and that has to do with some of the emotional ties that come into these episodes. Because just as impactful on a young viewer, if you've got things that may be potentially terrifying, is you've got some of these emotional twists that happen that level us, and we've been somewhat more tempered to these things, and now you're putting it on the shoulders of someone who maybe has not had that basis of experience yet to know how to come out on the other side. Loss of characters through just departure from the program, or maybe with the exception during the Moffat era, characters that that decide to no longer exist on this plane. Moffat tends to bring them back. Isn't that wonderful? But, but the Rory's up again, down again, up again, down again. But that's another conversation as well, and that has to do with the emotional content. Do you find that you have to have as many of these sort of sit-down reflective conversations after viewing on those heartstring moments as you do the hiding behind the couch moments?
I'd say more so. At least for my little, like, you know, I was worried at first too about the scary. This one, just the scarier, the better for. Like, there's, I haven't found anything that will actually, like, she'll be scared, but she'll want more. And, you know, and I was reluctant to show her the Crimson Horror because I thought that was a really frightening one. And you love the Crimson Horror, right?
Yeah.
And you love the, you know, the Weeping Angels and all of that.
Weeping Angels are my favorite villain, actually.
Weeping Angels, yeah. But the emotion, you know, like when we watched, you know, when Rose left and when Amy and Rory left and we faced the Raven, which was really scary, right? And
yeah.
and when Donna left, like all this stuff that is just really, like those were some big conversations there too, right?
Yeah.
Because it's sad when you get attached to somebody, and especially the ways it happened were pretty heartbreaking, right?
Yeah. Especially for Donna.
Mm. Yeah.
And Rose.
We're all on Team Donna. Yeah. It doesn't matter how. Ty, what about yourself and those kind of those emotional conversations?
Just saying Donna just made me feel. I can see it in my brain. I'm like, don't make me feel the feelings this morning.
It's too early for feels.
You know, I think it opens up. It's a good way to kind of teach your kids about death and about life transition. You know, life transition as far as everything has its time. And some people are only in your lives for a short amount of time, but they can have a lasting impact. And that's kind of how the companions are with the doctor. I mean, even as he regenerates, it seems as though, as he, you know, transitioned, for example, from 10 until 11, it seems as though he forgot all about, you know, Rose and Martha and all of those people. But did he really? You know, I think every single companion and everyone that he meets that has a profound impact on him, who he is, his personality, how he changes. Going from 9 to 10, look at how he changed and his personality started to kind of mirror Rose's more because of the impact that Rose had on him throughout the Ninth Doctor's run. You know, so we talk about changes and everything. And I told her, I said, sometimes it's sad. She made a school change in schools recently. And so we kind of used Doctor Who to help her make that transition. I was like, you had these people and they had an impact on your life. And maybe you will run into them again, because sometimes the doctor runs back into his old companions again. But maybe you won't. But they've had a impact on you. They've helped you. They've changed you. They've given you great and wonderful memories. And those are the things that you keep close to your heart and you cherish them. And as far as death, it does happen. I'm like, the people all have their time and they expire and they let go. But I'm like, just think about all the wonderful and magical and great things that you're doing while you're here. I was like, look at all the wonderful things that Clara did. She had an impact on every single doctor, this ordinary girl. And I was like, but now that she's gone, she's still forever in your heart. She's always in our heart. She's always in the fandom's heart. And I'm like, we can always go back. We can watch those episodes. You can always relive that time with Clara. I'm like, although it doesn't work like that necessarily in life, I'm like, we can go back. We can look at videos. We had someone pass in our family a couple of years ago, and we like to go back and watch videos. We like to go back and look at the photographs and everything. I was like, so we hold on to those good memories and those wonderful things and think about all the, you know, awesome, incredible, and amazing, and sometimes not the greatest things that we've ever done, but it all makes us human. So I told her, you know, people transition, people move on, people die, but that's okay. Enjoy the moment while you're in the moment, and do what you can in that moment.
So it has something to contribute to grief and loss as well.
Right.
To sort of step back a little bit here and sort of keep it maybe in a conversation that we can engage our audience with here too, and that has to do with entry points. I know on our podcast we devoted an episode where we wanted to put together a starter pack. That was going to be the idea of, based on the age level of your younger viewer that you were trying to introduce to, where would be a good leaping off point to not only keep it potentially content monitored, or be it just too much overwhelming story material, you know, trying to throw too much knowledge of the program in for someone who's just getting their feel with it, but at the same time is something that's going to be wholly entertaining to whatever that particular age level is. And we considered it all the way back to, I think we're considering kindergartners and on up from there. But some people have attempted even younger. If you've got a two-year-old who just sees it and it starts working its way in, so it's familiar imagery, then it's a much easier a bridge to have later. I know what we developed as our set of ideal episodes. I think we had about 7 of them, and I'll check in a minute. If you ever go to Gallifrey Public Radio/71, because it was our 71st episode that we had done, and it'll take you right to our discussion of it and the list of the episodes that we ran through. I know our list, but before I even broach that, I wanted to see what you used, or in retrospect, what you think might have been the most effective leaping off point for younger viewers. David, I'll start with you.
Sure. But now, when I was a kid, it was kind of an interesting experience because the current Doctor was like 5 and the 5th Doctor and the 6th Doctor, mm-hmm. and on PBS they would show every night at 11 o'clock. They would show the old episodes that were more recent at the time, like from the '80s, and then on Sunday mornings they showed the ones from the first Doctor. So what I on Sundays I actually watched the show in order from the very beginning, so I got to see that narrative, and concurrently with that, I would watch the modern episodes with the 5th and 6th Doctor.
Okay.
So it was kind of an interesting thing of like, how did this connect to back to that?
And right.
it's like, in a sense, it's like the greatest story ever told. Like, it is just this ongoing kind of thing. Now with Juliet here, the first one we did was A Christmas Carol, right? That was the one that she with Matt Smith, which I also think has a lot of morals in that episode, and just a sense of redemption, being able to just change, even as an old man, to be able to change your ways, change your heart, and that was the one you said you wanted to watch over and over and over again,
yeah,
right?
It was kind of sad when who he loved. She was stuck in like an icebox thing, mm-hmm. and there was like a certain number of times she got to do it, mm-hmm. and it was every day. It was a year for
It was a year for her.
It was a year for.
It was a year for everybody else, but a day for her.
Yeah.
Right.
And they kept on doing that and doing that and doing that, and she thought it was a day. Like every day was Christmas, and they knew it was a year.
Yeah, and so that one that was kind of the end. We just loved that one. We watched it over, and so there was actually a little bit. It's kind of like when you have a favorite thing to order at a restaurant, and then you want to just keep ordering that because you know you love it. And it's, but the next one we saw after that was the one where the 11th Doctor meets Amy.
Yep.
For the first time, which I just think is and she just connected to Amy right away. I mean, just about right.
That's still my favorite companion.
Oh. Yeah. I just like the idea of seeing her as a little girl, right? And then later, I think that was just like the perfect end. And then we just, for a while, we just kind of stayed with Amy and Rory, and so we kind of just stayed with that for a while, and then
Rose.
Well, I think then we did the then you really wanted to see the Blinking Angels, right?
You mean not the Blink?
The Weeping Angels.
So going back to Blink. Okay.
So we saw
Blink,
Blink, which is a great, you know, standalone, of course, and then, you know, after we'd seen more with Amy, then I said, okay, you're ready to see the Angels take Manhattan. Which
I was so excited to see,
and that was kind of devastating, right?
Were you excited when you were done watching it?
Kind of, interesting that, like, how the, who wrote the book that the doctor was reading.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Which was the, which was Melody Pond's
story. Melody Pond's, right,
story,
yeah.
Right, right. Ty, what about yourself as far as what you felt was the safest starting episode to put Genesis down in front of?
I started her where I started at. Once upon a time, Doctor Who was on Netflix, so that's how I brought her.
That's going to be one of our closing topics here.
Yeah, I brought her in on Netflix and let her start off with Rose. I thought it was a good introductory episode to kind of give her a feel and get her curiosity going. You know, who is this doctor? She had pretty much the same questions that I had. Who is this doctor? What is this TARDIS? What's going on? What is the Time Lord? I mean, because before I started watching it, I had no idea about nothing. I got brought into the fandom by some work friends when I was working at a call center. And they told me that I was a geek, but my geek game wasn't strong enough because I wasn't watching Doctor Who. So I'm like, I'll show you. I'm going to go home and watch it this weekend.
Watch how fast I can take that out.
Yeah, and so that's where I brought her in. I thought that the... you know, that the Altons were just enough creepy, but not scary enough, because she's not quite as brave as Julian. That's why we haven't watched The Weeping Angels. But I thought it was a good monster to be able to bring her in, and I just thought it was a really good jumping off point, because the episode was written and kind of designed for newer Whovians to be able to come into. I think it brought enough of the classic series in and gave enough respect and paid enough homage to the series to give you a curiosity to want to go back. But then it also made you want to go forward and see where this next chapter of Doctor Who was going to go next. And right away, she picked right up on it, and she immediately wanted to go to the next episode. I think the first day that she watched it, we went through the first four. And I literally had to, like, drag her off of the couch. It was that night on a Saturday night. I'm like, it's time for bed. And she was like, one more.
That sounds familiar.
So I'm like, tomorrow, yeah. And then after she saw, you know, more. She go on and she, you know, saw the Daleks and everything, right away on the Daleks, and she wants everything Daleks. I'm stepping on Dalek toys all the time now.
Thank you, Netflix, for your auto next episode play, where if you're not there to monitor it, they're already into the next story.
Right.
I just hate that they judge you, and I'll be like, are you still watching?
Yes. Right, yeah, actually I am still watching. Is that even a question? Keep going.
I love the fact that you picked up in those two episodes in particular, taking the 11th hour, as one potential real immersion point, because of the use of a young character, and seeing the Doctor partnered with that character throughout, and that restoration of relationship. But I know a lot of people have criticized Rose as saying, if you're bringing a program back after this hiatus and you're going to go with the Autons, why would you use the Autons? They're not that ominous. They're not that challenging. But as you mentioned, think about what they were attempting to do for the business of the program and bringing this to viewers that may be waiting to see it restored, but at the same time, you have to farm a whole new audience from scratch. So you don't necessarily want to terrify them completely right. off and say, I can't put my 14, 12, 10, 8-year-old in front of this because it's just too intense. So they started a little cooler. Right. Our list actually didn't contain Rose, although in retrospect, I think that might have been one of the ones that we had a listener that had said they keep it on their list of their top five to use with their kids. 11th Hour was our top choice because that was one where, because you had an entirely new production team, you had almost an entirely new cast, you had a new set, you had a new concept and a new direction for the program under Moffat's tenure, they had to do a real proof of what they've got. And they had to put a story together that said, look, no matter who you are as viewers, what your age is, what your family dynamic is, what your social dynamic is, we've got you covered. You were fans of something up to this, and we've got you. So it's really a nice, it's a great episode, standalone. We use it for non-Whovians of all ages as a point, and that's not because we're necessarily huge Matt Smith fans or huge Moffat supporters. We may or may not be. I'm never going to discuss that. I will discuss that later. But it is a great jump point for any viewer of any age. We also had Girl in the Fireplace a lot because of that sort of relationship with another character that was identifiable, not necessarily in innocence, but in something that was a good touchstone for the viewer. We had Partners in Crime, because that was, as for sheer fun factor, without necessarily being too creepy. Okay, because they're adipose.
What are you doing with
adipose, really? So that has a great touch. The Doctor's Wife was one we had in there for your tweens and that sort of thing, because it's very relationship-oriented, it's very emotion-oriented, and it's Neil Gaiman. It's just great story craft, brilliant story craft. We put Closing Time and Doctors on a, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship on our list as well, because those are ones where you get sheer fun factor. Closing Time with Stormageddon and dealing with Craig and all the things attached with that is not necessarily at any point overwhelmingly creepy as we assessed it. Right. And we were bouncing this off. One of my co-hosts has three boys. I can lose track. They're all over the place. Of varying ages, everywhere from 6 to 13 now. And that's one where it's just enjoyable because it's your classic comedic romp. And as with Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, come on.
Right.
It's written right into the title, right, for crying out loud. But it has good post-episode conversation points. You've got the hunter who has to learn a lesson about going blindly after things and not caring about the nature of his kill.
Right.
You've got the loss of Tracy, the Triceratops, that becomes this moment where the whole episode stops. You know, and you've got these great gear changes.
Right.
And then there's a decent amount of terror factor. And then the final moments of what the Doctor's very unusual decision about what to do with your villain when his ship is taken out at the end of it. And there's a great moral discussion to have in that if you feel that your viewer is ready. So we've got some time here to be able to take the conversation into some success stories or lack of success stories that we've had. But right before we do, though, just to make sure that we're rounding out the conversation for the entire household, is non-Whovian adults who share the house. And Ty, you said that your husband may be a Marvel appreciator and that sort of thing, but if he hasn't yet found anything that can allow him to loop in, has he attempted to watch some Doctor Who and just doesn't click?
He's there, sort of. I mean, if you count him kind of playing Call of Duty in the back of the living room while we're all sitting in front of the TV like this. And my two-year-old is wandering back and forth between us just trying to figure out what the heck everybody's doing and why no one's talking to her.
Fair.
No, I think he's tried. I think there are some episodes that he's, you know, I could see him kind of peeking in and there's a little bit of curiosity and everything, but he gives me my space to kind of like what I like. And he's like, you know, I know that you like it. I know that you appreciate it. And that's okay. He doesn't really, you know, pick on me about it or do anything like that. One day, maybe he'll come around and you know, and get smart and do it. But he hasn't done it yet, so.
There may be a tone shift that's going to be happening when we go forwards beyond Moffat's closing year. Whatever swan song he goes out on in Series 10 and handing things over to Chris Chibnall, Moffat may actually explain for himself. We've already pegged him as such, but he may explain that he's not one to write action sequences, really. He doesn't do big battles. It's not his wheelhouse for his gift as a writer. He's an emotional writer. He writes comedy and he writes great heartstring tugging emotion. It's what he can do.
Right.
Chibnall may have that opportunity. Coming from Broadchurch and doing some of these intense dramas and things, you may be able to get that sort of oversight into it so that somebody who's of military background or understands structure and has those kind of interests with their content as well might find something that says, oh, okay, we've got bigger Centauran battles now, or we've got something of that nature.
Yeah, and I think that would be something that would bring him. He's all about, I mean, he's an action movie kind of guy. I mean, he likes Indiana Jones. It's like one of his, you know, favorite ones. Those are the kind of elements that he wants to see. So I don't think that it's, you know, necessarily that he thinks it's a horrible program. There are a couple of episodes he said, and I'm like, well, you know, from you just kind of listening in the background, I'm like, what'd you think? And he was like, yeah, he was like, it's definitely one for, you know, for the little bit of feeling the feels. Or he was like, I can kind of see where, you know, some moral things came out of it, some moral lessons and everything. But he's an action guy, you know, so it just doesn't tap into that part of him. He wants to see somebody carrying a gun.
That is
now
true.
We have watched a few episodes of Torchwood, and he did like Torchwood.
I came from Torchwood.
Yeah,
as a lot of people did.
Yeah, he did. He liked Torchwood.
Yeah, Juliet, if you had to have a conversation with a grown-up that has never watched Doctor Who before, but you wanted to tell them either, you could either tell them an episode that they should watch that they'd really like, or if you just want to tell them about what the show is about to explain it to a grown-up. It's easier to talk to kids about shows and things, but if you're trying to explain to one of the big, dumb grown-ups about what makes the show so great, what would you say?
I would ask them, like, if they like scary stuff, and or if they like mischievous stuff better, or if they like sad stuff better, or happy, or a combo.
Okay.
And whichever one they would say, I would say, well, then maybe this one would be best for you. And this episode is based on it's like based on a new companion or something.
Okay.
And or like the doctor's or the doctor's bride, I would say it's about this girl who someone's controlling and makes them kill, or I shouldn't give it away.
Something for everybody, though.
Yeah.
And that's a great point, and I'm glad that Juliet brought this up, is this show is so malleable and has had an opportunity to explore so many different territories and subject material that you've got something that you could probably find an entry point for anyone's personal tastes, whether it be the action-oriented or somebody who likes goofball comedies at times and wants to keep it kind of light and slapstick. So you may be able to customize a recommendation list of an episode or two or three or five or ten that that cater right to that, because when you've got 270 some odd stories to be able to utilize, odds are good you're going to find. And then there's even individuals who go into later years. I've had to introduce folks in their 60s and 70s to the program. But if they were fans of some of the, you know, the classic 60s Avengers from British television and things of that sort, and they just never tapped into Doctor Who because that was science fiction and it wasn't really their sort of thing. But there are elements to the conversations and the tone of the show through classic series that you can use as their entry point, too. It doesn't necessarily have to be, well, some of the Matt Smith ones were pretty straightforward, so you can just, you know, rock your way through that. We will have on the horizon the development of the Class spinoff series that we'll be having a little later in the spring, I think, if they can film it that fast. I think they're in production on it right now. And that's sort of filling the shoes a little bit of what we had for the Sarah Jane Adventures for a little while that was targeted towards, this is going more towards your 12 to 18 audience, where Sarah Jane Adventures was really more 10 to 14 at times. But it's going to have a little bit more of its darker tones or some of its moral discussions that dig a little deeper. But that gets us to our conversation about bridging what is now going to be a very quiet year for Whovians in general, and trying to introduce people to the program because we don't have streaming content to be able to say, look, you've got a Netflix account, go take a look. Oh, your Hulu, go take a look at it. Oh, your Amazon Prime, sure, why don't you go queue that up? I have this conversation at least a half a dozen times a week in various formats about what you think one of the best ways to get people into the program, young or old, when they're closing doors on us as far as having that means of accessibility. What do you think may be one of the remaining means that we have of cultivating new viewers in light of all this? David, what would you think?
Well, you know what we've been doing recently, because we've been getting ready for this convention, we've been really brushing up on the classic episodes. And once she was, so now I wanted to make sure we saw something from everybody who's going to be here today, and so that's, you know, it. We'll just watch that on the phone or the computer, mm-hmm. or that kind of thing. Just one. If I could just digress for a moment, there was one point I wanted to make that hasn't come up, but I think it's a really important point, which is, I think kids are really natural philosophers, and we have really great philosophical discussions all the time. And I think it's some of the best philosophical discussions you can have are with kids, and they come up with. And I think Doctor Who facilitates that so much. And so it's, you know, there's our favorite episodes are not so much the action. One that we watched over and over again, I think one of your favorites is the one with, the, you know, where with Amy and Rory, where that's it's with the dream,
yeah.
The dream lord, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't know whether it's which one is a dream and which one is real. And we just watched that over and over again. And it brought up so many interesting conversations about, you know, the nature of reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were having these conversations like, well, what if, you know, what if the world's only been around for, you know, a second, but we've had all this these memories implanted there? Like, what if that's what real is? And it's I think it really enrolls us in an expansive feeling for the universe and for ourselves and for the possibilities of reality, and it gets us to think in ways that are just so different from, you know, I wish there was more in school, you know, it's like this is, you know, like the way things appear.
Right.
And
sometimes we, in the middle of that episode, the first time I watched it, sometimes we paused the episode and you asked me, well, which one do you think is real and which one do you think is a dream? And I went off and on and off and on. But then I guess neither. And I was right.
Yeah. It's when we watch an episode, we are constantly on pause. Like, you know, like, so, which we couldn't do that when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we talk about, you know, what is going on here. And, you know, and so sometimes it's just done just, especially when the plots are kind of complicated, we have to take a couple of minutes to actually just see what's going on. But sometimes it's just to be like, well, what do you predict and what do you think is going to happen?
And David,
next?
You own these episodes on DVD or?
Well, I mean, this is when it was on Netflix.
Oh, right.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I'm, but the ones from the classic series, we can still do that because we're,
sure.
And there's still some ones, you know, from on, you know, that you can get on like Daily Motion from the.
Right. For a little while, you know, longer. Yeah, they're,
right.
They're starting to be much.
And
more
we have all the ones with the 12th Doctor that we bought on Amazon.
Right.
So we can we can do that too, but you know, and also, you know, like the ones with River Song, we love River Song, and we love just being able to explain time like that, and I mean, it's just it just makes for so many fascinating conversations about life, and you agree?
Yeah.
Ty, what about yourself as far as the looking forward to how you can continue to expose either the viewers in your household or somebody new that you want to try to bring into the fold with fewer and fewer opportunities to get it into their hands?
I think my daughter and I are both kind of expanding out together. We're kind of getting into some of the Big Finish things. She likes comics, so we're going out getting some comics and everything, but definitely Big Finish right now is kind of the big thing for us. It's something that I'm interested to. We go out and we're doing errands together and everything, or if we're around the house and things, she likes to listen to podcasts and everything already, like I do. So, you know, and even if it was someone that wasn't in my household that maybe is a podcast listener or something, Big Finish could be a good starting point. And, you know, I went to a couple of the panels and everything this weekend, and they gave like a lot of really good suggestions. So I'm taking those back home with me, and whatever episodes I don't have, I'm going to fill in the gaps and you know, go back and listen to those. I got a lot of good suggestions from, got a chance to speak briefly with Terry Malloy, since I'm here doing press this weekend. And so he gave me a lot of good suggestions and everything too. And I'm going to kind of bring my daughter in with that. And my best friend, who is not a sci-fi person at all, she's like, you keep going to these conventions and all you talk about is Doctor Who. So she was like, I'm gonna have to check it out and everything. And I told her, you know, that there's some availability and everything on Daily Motion right now. But she's another podcaster that loves podcasts. So, you know, once I go through and kind of preview some of these episodes and see which ones would make sense for someone who really doesn't know a whole lot about the show, and she'll kind of be going in basically based off of my explanation of what's going on. I don't know how great that would be, because, I mean, think about when you try to explain Doctor Who to people that don't get it. They're looking at you like, okay. So yeah, big finish with the comics and everything. I think the, you know, the expanded worlds out there, there's just so much to explore. And now is the perfect time, since we have this gap in there, to kind of go through that and get at least get people's interest peaked.
Yeah.
You know, so that way by the time the, you know, the Christmas special that's still going to air this year, you know, they'll kind of be ready to go in, you know, and jump in, and hopefully we'll get some streaming options or something back soon. Yeah. So they'll be able to go back and review those.
And don't forget your local libraries. That's the one thing that we try to mention more and more often, because you have the opportunity to not only get DVD releases that you can check out from your local library resources, but some of them have even gone to the point of having streaming content that you can get directly from their available servers. So that's something that you can do to, rather than tell someone who's a friend of yours on the other side of the country, look, go drop $25 on some DVDs and trust us. It's not that simple. So you do have those means as well. We've got about a minute or two left here, and I just wanted to quick check in. If we've had, from anyone sitting out here with us, experiences that proved either particularly successful or were a whole, I think I traumatized my child sort of failures.
Well, I thought it was interesting that you were talking about how Julian, your older child, had different temperaments with differing tolerances for both scary and emotional storylines, because we actually found, you know, our daughter, when she was closer to that age, had lower tolerance for, you know, scary stories, but very high tolerance for complex emotional stories. And tried to start her on Rose, and then the third one in is Unquiet Dead, which to me, I think, had a more of a scare at could be as scary or more so than The Weeping Angels. Mm. So I just wanted to say, one thing is, it may depend very much on your child, and if your child is, if you are thinking of keeping them from, you know, skipping The Weeping Angels stories, we'll look out for Unquiet Dead if you want to start with, because that is a good access point, as you were saying, for those reasons. But I would, if I had to do it again, I probably would start with 11th Hour and then go back in a year or two.
Well, I think I may have shown her 11th Hour before we even met the heroes. So, you know, it was on the screen. She was walking through the room. It's happening.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I just think this is really interesting what you said about Rose, because my kids have seen everything from the new series and lots of classic series episodes, and the one that has ever scared them is that my daughter is scared of Rose. The Autons scare her and nothing else does. So one of the things I think is really important is that you kind of have to be there and watch it with them. It's really important to know, because you can't predict what they're going to like, and you can't predict what's going to be scary. Like, even if you know your kid, you just don't know. I mean, I would never have thought, like, my daughter is 9, and from the time she was maybe 6, her favorite doctor was Peter Davison. And I never would have thought that, not because I don't like him, but because those stories don't seem to me likely to appeal to someone that age, but they clearly do in her case, and I wouldn't have expected it. So I think it's interesting. People are very unpredictable about what they like and don't like.
I have a 4-year-old, and probably right when he was around 2, I started watching the series, and he had, not long after that, my husband had deployed, and so he's not a huge fan of the show. I say he's a closet Whovian. I think we've come down that he's a closet Whovian. He just wanted it. Because, like, my son started watching it to me, and then all of a sudden my son's running around the house going, "Hello, I'm the doctor," and exterminate, and so he's like, my husband, like, will watch it with me, but he'll sit there and, like, constantly ask me questions. "Well, what's going on here? What's going on here?" And I'm like, "Would you just please watch the show?" But he's like, "Well, the only reason I'm watching it is because when I make fun of you, I want to do it accurately."
That's a nice bluff, but that's right. Not really what's happening. The questions are genuine.
Yeah.
Well, we have to kind of call it for time, but I do want to thank David, Ty, and Juliet for joining us here. I've got another panel coming up at noon if we're going to be discussing, actually, character development beyond the screen. So those characters who have had further expansions in Big Finish Audio and their novels, comics, and things of that sort. So I'll be joined by Jason Hagelery from Big Finish, John Peel, our Doctor Who writer, and some other guests. So feel free to check us out in Room 1 for that. And GallifreyPublicRadio.com if you want to get some podcasts about three dorks sitting around talking about a British program. So you got that, too. A part of the Gunna Geek Network. Thank you very much, GunnaGeek.com. So thank you for joining us here today. Thanks for being a part.
That was actually a lot of fun listening to that one, and some very interesting points get brought up too.
Yeah, I liked the fact that we started to broach into the topic with Ty about trying to break down her husband from the military background and trying to find some sort of an in. And thankfully, we had one of our friends in the panel audience there, Ray, who suggested, she just immediately says, well, you know, there's Torchwood. You can always use Torchwood as a backdoor there, because that was her point of entry, too, exactly. And a lot of people's for that matter. So,
and I mean, that's the thing is it's, I mean, we've talked about it before on the show here that as long as you know your audience, you'll be able to find something. You know, you have to know what they're going to, what's going to appeal to them and that kind of thing. So I think the number one takeaway is, yeah, know your audience. Mm.
Yeah, for a show that has as many hundreds and hundreds of episodes under its belt that run the gamut in terms of creators, in terms of tone, in terms of subject matter, in terms of acting styles, you're sure to find something that's going to tap into some point of interest for a potential viewer. And you know, you may not hook them on it. That's mm-hmm. that's all right. But you can find something that you can probably mutually sit down and enjoy together. You're enjoying it because it's something you're fully immersed in. And they can enjoy it too because it's got some thread of connection there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, like Juliet was saying, that there's something in there for everybody. If you like anything, you're probably going to find at least one episode that has that. So just might have to do some digging, but it's worth it.
I'm going to have to make sure that I stay in contact with the Stroms and find out as the years go by how Juliet's choice of doctor changes over the years as she gets further and further invested, because she's plowing through classic episodes faster than Haley. So.
That doesn't take much.
Fair. So we should mention, Jay, what we're going to be jumping into next week before we get to any news for the night, because I'm kind of excited about this topic.
Yeah. So one of the things, I mean, we mentioned Torchwood, obviously, and that's something a lot of new Whovians know about, or you know, at least know about if they haven't watched. There's plenty of references to it and things like that. But we're also seeing the resurgence of UNIT, which is a very strong, you know, classic Who element. Mm-hmm. So we decided to take a look at, you know, you've got UNIT, which is kind of tasked with the whole defend the Earth from aliens thing most of the time. Mm-hmm. And then Torchwood, which is specifically designed to do that. And we're going to kind of compare and contrast the two of them and see where they fall into and if they can both really coexist, or if it's kind of redundant, or how it really works together.
And also discuss why it is that there may have been some conscious decisions never to really have the two overlap to anything other than mention within episodes or even in the extended content. So it's writer's decisions along the way, but maybe it's just because of the fact that they may be too close to the same bone. So we'll definitely take that apart. I'm looking forward to this quite a bit. Yep.
Next time we see Nick Briggs, that we're going to drop that idea, Torchwood versus UNIT.
not in tandem. Head to head. Civil War.
Choose a side.
Nice.
Bucky will not be involved.
All right, we ready for the news?
Can you imagine what Jack Harkness would do if Bucky were around? Oh, my God.
Hey, I got an idea for that arm,
the same
Bucky.
Thing he does when everybody else is around.
Thank you, R2.
All right. The first article that we've got in the news here is unfortunately a bit of a sad one. Actor Reg Whitehead recently passed away. Reg was known as one of the primary the monster actors from Classic Who. He was the very first Cyberman to appear on the screen, as well as the Yetis and a number of other monsters from the show.
We lost him at the age of 83, and also was seen in a number of other iconic series through the 60s and 70s. So if you got invested in The Saint, which you'll be seeing actually come around cinematically again this year, come to find out that that's actually in post-production. If you watched the original Avengers, not the Avengers,
not Avengers,
the Marvel Avengers, the spy thriller Avengers. He was involved in all of them, as well as, obviously, from what we recognized him from The 10th Planet and the other Classic Who episodes. So definitely going to miss Reg and all of his body of work. So,
and then some more news. Recently, Michelle Gomez was actually nominated for a BAFTA.
Strangely, I mean, and this is funny. I guess it's just the nature of our Whovian fan base. You know, she gets nominated for the BAFTA for all of her contributions for this past year, and people immediately started wondering why it was that PCAP wasn't. especially with some of the phenomenal work that he had invested into Series 9, a standalone episode, you know, and things of that sort. So not to in any way steal thunder from Ms. Gomez's accomplishments and her nomination for the supporting actress category. And we absolutely hope that that come 8th of May that she takes it home. She's up against some pretty stiff competition, but I think personally, and just based on my exposure to all the actors nominated across the various series, she should have this in the bag, or else she'll kill them all.
Exactly.
Scratch their eyes out.
She is just as formidable on an interview panel as she is in front of a camera.
I will admit I got a little bit excited when I was reading the article here, because they list the actresses that are nominated. You know, it goes Michelle Gomez for Doctor Who and Leslie Manville for River. I'm like, hey, we got two of them. Wait, no. Aww. Wait. Sorry, I might be slightly sleep deprived.
It's the bad kind of river.
Little piece of interesting news, if you want to put news in giant quotation marks. If you haven't checked the calendar, we had that day of stupidity pass around the first of the month, where everybody knows not to pay attention to anything on the internet, and yet people still do.
The one day of the year that people actually critically evaluate a news article before believing it's true.
But they handed us something that could have been potentially horrifically wonderful. I can't think of another combination of adjectives I can put together for it. As there was a false release from good old Groovy Bruce himself, Mr. Bruce Campbell, who announced that he was going to be playing the Doctor in the Americanized special Christmas 2016 simulcast event of Doctor Who Comes to America. And go ahead, and if you hadn't seen the show poster they put out, it's freaking amazing. I would have paid cash money for one of the Phantom events.
Yes,
where they do the simulcasts. Absolutely, without question.
Yeah, imagine the Doctor and his sonic boomstick.
Oh my god! You tell he's got a screwdriver in the photo too, but you can't really tell. But it looks. I don't know. It looks massive. I mean, yes. Bigger than the 12th new one, which is pretty formidable in its own right. But yeah. Oh, yeah. Well.
What could have been?
But the best news of the day, and what has been slowly dissolving the interwebs between the UK and the US right now, if not globally, has been a bit of news that we knew was coming around. And we finally got it for the Class spinoff.
We actually know our main cast now. We have Catherine Kelly playing the teacher, and then a group of four students played by Greg Austin, Sophie Hopkins, Vivian O'Para, and
Fadi El Sayed.
There you go.
Just jumping to your rescue on that one.
I appreciate that. But yeah, so that's going to be our main cast.
Yeah, some of the quotes from Patrick, from Stephen Moffat, from Brian Minchin talking about this casting, with the exception of your teacher's role, Catherine Kelly. People recognize her, you know, and she's been successful in about four or five episodes of The Night Manager, which I'm still waiting to. I'm waiting for it to close out its first series, and I'm going to dissolve it in a full chunk because T. Hitty, because you have to. But for the youth actors. I think Moffat himself came out and said that there's something wonderful about finding these, he didn't say diamonds in a rough, but he's calling them relatively unknown talents. Because there's something that they've found in them through the course of their screen casting process that they can't wait to unleash on the public. So.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been kind of interested in this show since we got the first announcement of it. But the more I'm finding out about it, the more excited I am for it.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be brilliant.
Yep. And we did figure out that at least one of the kids has a slightly kind of 6 degrees of separation connection to Doctor Who already. With oh, really? with Fadi and his work in one of Noel Clark's independent films. He's going to be appearing in, I think it was Brotherhood goes along with, or was it, it was
Brotherhood is the third part, yeah, Kidulthood, Adulthood, and then Brotherhood is closing out the series.
Gotcha. Excellent. So a bit of connection there. So absolutely. And more news. I'm sure we're going to get, obviously, a lot more casting decisions as they come about. But they'll probably be dropping them on us in waves like this because it makes for great PR, mm-hmm. and yeah. as we saw today.
Yeah. But yeah, they've officially started filming now. So we will definitely be getting more news as time goes on.
Yep. And of course, if you're working with, you know, with teens on the cast, you know that the social networks are going to be filled with their tweets and Instagram posts and Tumblr posts and everything else. So we'll have a nice line into the production process, probably more so than we normally do on standard Who content.
Now, you guys don't share anything about this. Does that include tweeting?
And I mean, even the number of people that know stuff now is higher because it's a bigger cast than we're used to.
I gotta wonder how many really what they consider kind of their A cast and their B cast, how many actors we're really going to be talking about here.
Well, we've got 5 in the production photos, plus probably we're going to see the same group of students in the classrooms a lot of the time.
Right. Yeah. Just got to think, you know, you run into issues when we get into these large ensemble casts. If you're, you know, we've been seeing it with shows like Legends of Tomorrow and so forth, where you want to give everybody a fair amount of screen time within the episodes that have some sort of tangential connection to their character. And that's a tough thing from a writer's perspective to really juggle.
Yeah, but I mean, Patrick Ness is a young adult author and he does this kind of thing. This is right in his wheelhouse. If anybody's going to know how to handle this, I believe he would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's absolutely staying at the core of this. I mean, it's funny how even though, you know, by you look at the crediting of it, he's not technically considered to be the showrunner for this, technically, but the reins are entirely in his hands. So this is going to be a fantastic thing for him, and he's busy. Mm-hmm. We talk often about how prolific he is on Twitter, and you know, so he may get to the point of oversharing, but it's fascinating to see. Because he still has book tours going on. He's still trying to juggle all the publicity and PR for his for all of his novels and those things as well. I think he's even still writing a piece while he's doing all this because he's got ideas he needs to get down before he loses them. Must have his muse in a straitjacket.
Yeah, I mean, it's very exciting. I can't wait to discover more of this and finally get to see the show. But we will definitely be covering it as time goes on and as we get more news because we're still about like 8 months away from any new Doctor Who.
Yay.
Unless you're listening to Big Finish, in which you're getting plenty all the time and you're perfectly sated.
Lies.
Say we switch formats and start covering Big Finish so that we always have something to talk about.
Well, listen to Big Finish and then just play with your Funkos and just act them out so you've got your own little screen.
There has to be a YouTube channel where somebody has done that.
Oh, and do stop motion Funkos? Maybe, except not all of them have posable arms, so it kind of gets very wooden after a while. Unless you go all Robot Chicken and cut the dolls apart so you can put them back together and pose them, but that gets creepy after a while.
Or maybe they've done full-blown claymation.
I would watch this.
All right, well, this has been episode 181 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, nothing says family like obsessing over the same obscure British television show together.
My toddler speaking in accents. And this is Kier saying, you are never too young for your parents to dress you up as a murderous piece of kitchenware.
And this is Haley saying that I hoped I would have a clever Doctor Who clay pun by the time it got to my turn, but I didn't, so sorry.
Nah. We'll clean it up and fail.
We'll see you guys next week.
Allons-y.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook @facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2016.
Comedy Gold!
Comedy Gold. Clammy Pond. Dang it.
Oh! I'll fit it back in. It'll be brilliant. People will never know. It's like speaking down this level all of a sudden, you know, and this is Haley saying, Clammy Pond! It'll sound totally natural.
Until they listen to this part and realize what happened.
It's a, that son of a bitch spliced it back in. Kira must be doing the editing. It was a total hack job. Son of a biscuit. My ancestors spit on your haircut. No one's going to get that reference. And that's the way I like it. I'll cap us all by just giving Haley her obligatory chicken story for the night.
Okay.
That my Tupperware dish came back to me today with roast rooster. And you'll have to check the GroupMe photo because apparently when the woman handed back the... You know, so I've got a whole side of of this damn thing. It's gamey as hell. It's like rooster's really chewy. That's why coq au vin is coq au vin because you're supposed to boil that crap in wine for hours to break it down. If you don't... You're basically eating shoe leather, so.
But you're gonna eat every goddamn bite of that bastard.
Oh, I'm gonna savor it raw. I'm gonna tear the bones. I'm gonna I'm gonna rub the oil on my face like battle armor. But she gave me the claw back. It's bent up with his middle claw sticking up. That's the way he died. Giving me the claw. Finger one last time.
That is beautiful.
But I'm sleeping like a baby and my hens are laying eggs again because they're not all stressed out. So in the end, I win.
Who's the bitch now?
All right, let's wrap this crap up.
Good night, Cleveland.